This is ProBlogger.
G'day there, my name is Darren Rouse and I'm the blogger behind ProBlogger.com, a blog, podcast, event, job board and a series of ebooks all designed to help you to start an amazing blog, to create content that will change people's lives and to hopefully make some money from your blog as well. Learn more about ProBlogger over at ProBlogger.com. Now, today is episode 192, and in today's lesson, I want to talk about some of the things that successful bloggers are doing to increase the conversions on their website and to, I guess, guarantee their success at not only as bloggers to build an audience, but also to help them to build a business and to make money from their blogs. This episode is actually inspired by a post we had on ProBlogger, the blog, this week. It was a post from John Stevens, who shared 9 conversion habits of the world's most successful bloggers. And it's a post that I'm going to link to in today's show notes because I think it's essential reading for anyone who does want to monetize their blog and to learn this stuff. In today's episode, I want to pick up on 3 of the 9 points that John mentioned. So I want to highlight them, expand upon them a little bit, and talk about why I think they are so important. But at the end of this episode, I also want to share something that I've noticed about many of the social media marketing bloggers that I follow. These people who are experts in their field who are doing something a little different to what John says in his post. By no means am I saying John's wrong, but there's also something else that I've noticed about these other bloggers, and I want to highlight that at the end of today's show as well. So you can see John's post over in today's show notes. There's a full transcription of the show as well over at ProBlogger.com/podcast/192, and I'll highlight John's post there. Also, check out the Facebook group, the ProBlogger community Facebook group. You can go to ProBlogger.com/group. This week, being the start of May, we've been talking in the group about our goals for the month. We've been doing some accountability there. I also shared a new tool I'm using for live streaming on Facebook, which is just blowing my mind, a really affordable tool. We've had discussions on SEO, affiliate marketing, video, and much more. So we would love you to join the group at ProBlogger.com/group. Okay, let's get into today's show.
Creating great content, finding an audience, building engagement, monetizing your blog. This is ProBlogger.
So last week on ProBlogger, we published a fantastic post by John Stevens, a guest post. It was titled, as I said in the top of the show, The 9 Conversion Habits of the World's Most Successful Bloggers. And in this post that John wrote, John analyzes how some very well-known bloggers have built successful businesses around their blogs. And he talks about these 9 habits that they've gotten into. And these are things that have been around for a little while, but I guess have changed over the last few years. And as I think back to 2002 and look at how blogs are today, what he's highlighted are really some of the key changes that have taken successful bloggers to be successful business people. And there's a real distinction there. Just building a successful blog that's well-read is great, and that could be just your goal, to have lots of readers. But if you want to monetize your blog, if you want to build a business around your blog, there are certain things that you probably need to work on. And John has highlighted some really good habits to, I guess, build here. And there's lots of good advice. And I really do recommend you have a read of the post because it's a great snapshot of some of the current trends in blogging and building an online business from a marketing perspective. In today's episode, I want to just pull out 3 of the things that John talks about and add some of my own thoughts. And as I said at the top of the show, I want to add in something that isn't really there in John's article. And I'm not saying he's wrong. I'm just saying that this is something that I think is just as important, if not more important, than these other things to keep in mind. Because sometimes we can get a little bit distracted by the new things and the trends and these sorts of strategies. They're important, but there's other stuff that we need to keep in mind and keep in balance. So the first thing that I want to talk about that John picks up, and it's his first point as well, is that the successful bloggers that he's talking about use multiple opt-in boxes on their site. Now, John correctly identifies in this article that email is so important in most of the most successful bloggers' strategies. And this is something that shouldn't be new to you. I've been talking about email since my very early episodes. If you go right back to the start, you'll see there's numerous episodes on how to build your email list. Email is so important if you want to sell anything to your audience, if you want to build traffic to your blog, if you want to build community with your audience. It can help you in all of these different ways. And so it's really important to build that list. And I'll link to some of the shows that we've had in the past on email on the show notes today. But John here is really highlighting one strategy that will help you to build your list, and that is that you shouldn't just ask for people to opt into your email list once on your blog or even once on any one page. John identifies here that most of the key successful bloggers that he's looking at have multiple calls to action to opt in on every page on their blog. The reality is that people are becoming increasingly blind to our calls for them to opt in to our email lists. Now, if you think back to 2004, 2005 on the internet, the big cool thing back then was banner advertising. And I remember seeing my first banner ads and I was fascinated by them. Oh, what are these things? And Google AdSense was starting to put all these sort of text ads around the internet. And people were clicking those links and those ads like crazy back then because they were new. And then a couple of years later, people in the advertising industry began to write articles about how people were suffering from ad blindness. And this is a thing that we all know today because we all know there are ads on most websites on the internet, but very few of us even see the ads anymore because we've become blind to that marketing technique. And this is something that is happening in most marketing techniques today. And one of them, I think, is opt-in blindness. People are becoming increasingly blind to our calls to action to subscribe, whether that be by us offering them a free guide to something or a free video or a free report or a free resource download. These calls to subscribe to my list and get the free stuff, people are increasingly ignoring them, and that's because they're seeing them so often. Now, I don't believe that we should stop doing, you know, opt-ins on our site, but we need to get a little bit smarter about how we call people to get those opt-ins. And one of the ways that we can do that is to have multiple opt-ins on our page. Now, the key with this, and John talks about this in the article, is to find balance. Now, we've all been to sites that constantly interrupt us, asking us for an opt-in. You know, you arrive on the site and there's a pop-up before you can see anything. And then 30 seconds later, after you've closed that pop-up and you scroll down, there's a little slide inbox that comes on. And then before you visit the second post that you want to visit on the site, there's another interruption. And then as you're leaving the site, there's another interruption. And all over the site, there's calls to action as well. I'm not talking about that. I don't want you to annoy your readers to the point where they either leave your site or give you their email address. But I do think we can be slightly more aggressive than just having one call to action. And this is something that I've experimented with on both of my sites, Digital Photography School and Pro Blogger. On Digital Photography School at the moment, if you arrive on that site, you'll be greeted if you're on a desktop computer with a welcome mat and it's a big slide in from the top. It's fairly aggressive. That works really well. If you come back again, you won't see that. We don't want every visitor, every time they visit, to see that. And so the first time they come, they'll see that. And then there's a couple of more subtle calls to action on the site. So in the sidebar, there's a really subtle call to action. In some articles, we also have at the bottom of the article, we might have a call to action. And then also, if you viewed a few pages while you're on the site, you'll see an exit pop up as well. And this is where you go to leave the site and there'll be a little box come up and ask you to subscribe then, if you haven't already subscribed, that is. And so it's tracking whether people take action on the first few times, and if they have, they won't see the secondary call to action. And what we found is that by adding that last exit pop-up, we've increased our sign-ups quite considerably. I think it went up like 30-40%. So having more than one opt-in on your site is something that a lot of bloggers now are doing. Now, as I said before, you've got to get the balance right. There's a couple of bloggers that I have been to their sites recently where I've just like, this is just too much. I'm just being bombarded. And in some cases, they're bloggers that I've already subscribed to their email list. And so it's even more annoying because I know they produce good stuff, but I just don't want to keep seeing those messages. So there's a variety of ways to do that. I'm going to link in the show notes to a few episodes that I've had in the past on email and how to get those subscribes. But do experiment with the different technologies that are around at the moment.
You're listening to ProBlogger.
Okay, the second thing that John highlights in the article is to use the space above the fold on your website really well. Good use above the fold. So if you're new to blogging, if you're new to the internet, you're probably going, what in the world is Darren talking about? Above the fold is a term that's a bit geeky. It basically means if you go to a website, what you see above the fold is everything that you can see before you start to scroll. So if you go to a website on your desktop, you will see the top part of the website and then you begin to scroll, and everything that you see as you begin to scroll is technically called below the fold. So really you want to think about what can people see when they arrive on your site. Because what they see without having to scroll, they're much more likely to take notice of and they're much more likely to take action on. It's significantly higher. So what is above the fold on your site is really important. And John shares some examples of what people do on the front pages of their blogs above the fold and talks about, you know, including, particularly on the front page of your site, including things like benefit statements, social proof, your opt-in calls, so getting that email address, proof of authority. These are some of the things that John talks about as being important there. He does give you some really good examples of what bloggers do above the fold there. The other thing I want to encourage you to think about above the fold is what's happening on your blog post pages. The reality is that most people will be arriving on your blog, not to your front page, but to a blog post. What happens above the fold on your blog post is really important as well. And one of the things I've noticed happening increasingly over the last few months is bloggers putting so much stuff above the fold on their blog posts that you can't actually see the content when you first arrive on their site. And whilst I can understand why they might do that, they might want to have a big email opt-in at the top of their blog posts because that's the most important thing to them. The reality is that if someone arrives on your site expecting to read an article on a particular topic and they can't see it, then that creates an impression upon them. And whilst a percentage of people might give you their email address before they read the article, I actually think that it's probably smarter to show the article first and then try and get the email address, or give them a chance to start reading it and then interrupt them in some way as well. So really think about above the fold. It is very important, but on blog posts, it's really important to make sure your content is viewable immediately when people arrive on your site so that they don't have to start scrolling to read anything and to get some value. You want to start delivering value right up top on your site. Of course, pay attention to what's happening on your front page of your site. I'm going to talk about that in the next point as well. Above the fold there is probably a different kettle of fish. You want to be doing some different things on that front page, but in the blog post itself, make sure there's content above the fold as well.
Creating great content and building your audience. This is ProBlogger.
Okay, the third thing I want to pick up from John's articles, and there's lots more in it than just these three things, is he talks about the use of the homepage, and he talks a little bit about how that has changed in blogs over the years. Blogs, the successful bloggers that John's talking about, he talks about how they use static homepages to funnel additional leads. And this has been a massive shift over the last few years of blogging. If I think back to my first blog in 2002, and my blog back then was pretty much the same as 99% of blogs back in 2002, if you went to the front page of that blog or any other blog, you would see the last 5 to 10 blog posts on the front page of the blog in their entirety. So you would go to that My Blog and you would see, it was a very long page, you would see the whole article, you know, the whole latest article that I would write. Even if it was a 5,000 word article, it would all be on the front page. And then you'd scroll below that and there'd be the next article in its entirety. And then it would be the next article in its entirety. And so I actually did, I went back and had a look at my first blog in an internet archive version of it. And this is what happened. It was a very long page. There were 10 articles in their entirety. And this is what bloggers did back then. It's just what happened. It's just the way that things were. And then things began to change a little bit. And we began to see in probably 2004, 2005, people began to just show excerpts of their articles. Again, it would just be down the page. It would be, you know, the most recent article at top and then the next one, then the next one. And again, it would be 5 to 10 articles, the title and an excerpt. It might be the first couple of paragraphs. And there was massive debate about this when it first started, people first started to do it. And people were like, I don't want to have to click. They were complaining about having to click to read more. And yet people did it and they realized it was a better user experience for people. People would be able to scan that front page to find the article that they wanted to read. And it would be a shorter front page as well, take less time to load, all of that type of thing. And then we began to see other changes. A few years ago, we began to see what front pages of blogs that looked more like magazines. They were more of a grid-like layout, and you still see a lot of these today. They would show the latest posts, but usually there'd be an image for the post because the web had become more visual by this point. It would have the title, and many times it didn't even have anything else, just the title and the image. Sometimes it would have a little excerpt. Sometimes there'd be a big slider at the top with the featured posts, but it was all about the content. It was all still about the content on the front page of the blog. I guess in many ways, they began to look a little bit more like portals or magazines in style. And in fact, this sort of magazine style was what a lot of them were called. And this is what I began to experiment with on my blogs. And then for me on ProBlogger, I began to realize that I didn't want to just show the latest content. I actually wanted to show other things that were happening on the site. And really, the next stage that some bloggers went to was to really change things more into a portal on their front page. And so previous to my current design on ProBlogger, some of you will remember that we had my latest video on the front page. I had my latest blog post. I had the latest jobs on the job board. When I started the podcast, I'd pull in the latest podcast. And so it became more of a portal to the different things that were going on, as well as some featured content as well. And I realized around this time that it wasn't just my latest content that I wanted to highlight, but other key posts on the site. And this is, I guess, where the changes have been coming. People began to realize it's not just about the latest, it's about getting people to the right content. And this is really what John is picking up on in this article, and he highlights a few examples of it. More recently, we're seeing people create front pages that don't really look like blogs at all. In fact, some of them don't even have any content on their front page. They're more like landing pages that funnel their readers to do certain things. And John picks up in the article about how many of them are funneling people to subscribe to their email list. For example, if you go to the front page of Michael Hyatt's blog, or site, I would call it now, you get taken to his welcome page. And this welcome page is all about building credibility. It's about telling you what he does and then getting your email address. That's really what it is. And if you go and have a look at his page, it's very cleverly designed. The only thing you can really do on that page is to put in your email address, unless you scroll right to the bottom of the page. And that's the only place that you can find a link to any other part of his site. Everything on that front page is about trying to get the email. And he does that with a series of download opt-in offers. And he doesn't just have one, he has a number of different offers on that page. It's all about trying to get people to give the email address. It's not until you get to the footer, the very bottom of that front page, that he has links to his blog, to the content itself. So the only way to get to the blog is to actually scroll past all the opt-ins to that. Michael's, I think, is a fairly extreme example of that. There are others that certainly try and get the email, but they also try and do other things. And Pat Flynn's is a great example of that. If you go to the front page of Smart Passive Income, Pat's blog, and I'll link to all these in the show notes today, you'll see there that Pat also has a very strong call to action to subscribe. It's right front and center. In fact, pretty much takes up most of the above the fold space. But then if you scroll down a little further, he begins to highlight his most recent content. He highlights his latest blog posts, his latest podcasts, and also highlights some of his recommended affiliate products. Pat has a slightly different approach to his front page. It's not just about getting the email. He wants to highlight his content. He wants to highlight some of his affiliate products. I guess ProBlogger's front page is similar, more similar to Pat's. We certainly call for a subscribe on the front page. In fact, we do it twice. We do it at the top and we do it down the bottom. There's also another call to action to subscribe there. And I've found that bottom subscription works quite well. But then between those calls to subscribe, we highlight our content. We highlight our recent blog posts. We highlight our recent podcasts. We highlight some of the information about our events. The key for me is to get the subscribe, but I know from my experience that people are much more likely to subscribe to my list if I give them some of my content first. If they get a taste for what I do, they're much more likely to subscribe. And so for me, that's the approach I've taken. Now, there's no right or wrong in designing your home page, but I think you'll see from the examples that a lot of the blogs that John's talking about in this article don't look like blogs anymore in the traditional sense. What I would encourage you to do is to think about what's your number one goal. What's your number one goal? And to do that above the fold on your homepage and to make some really strong calls to action on your homepage. You don't just have to show your latest content there. You can show something else as well. The other thing that you'll see in the article that John wrote is that he highlights that we do something else on the front page of ProBlogger, and that is to show something different to a new visitor, to a returning visitor. If you come to ProBlogger for the very first time, and if you've been there before, you won't see this, so you might want to open up an incognito browser and go to ProBlogger.com. New visitors see something different to returning visitors. New visitors get an explanation of what the site is about and a prominent link to our Start Here page and a strong call to subscribe. Returning visitors don't see that. They don't see that introduction to the site, the big button to the Start Here page. They get shown new content since the last time they visited. And we can actually track how many posts you've missed, and we highlight that as well. So this is another sort of creative thing that we've been trying out on ProBlogger, and it's worked quite well.
How to build and monetize your blog. This is ProBlogger.
So there are three things that I think are really worth highlighting in John's article. And let me just recap them. These successful bloggers use multiple opt-in calls to action on their blogs, sometimes more than one on a page. They use above the fold, the space above the fold, really well. And I would really encourage you to think about that for your front page, but also for your blog posts as well, making sure that there's content above the fold, particularly on blog posts. And the third thing that I'll highlight is the static homepage and really thinking about what your goals and objectives are for the front page of your blog. There's lots more in the article that John talks about. He talks about making your content easy to share. He talks about using overlays to capture additional emails. He talks about using social proof. He talks about the use of the Start Here page, which I think is really worth highlighting. I would have talked more about that, but I've already talked about Start Here pages in episode 111, so go listen to that one if that's something you need to do. It is a very powerful, the Start Here page. More powerful, in my opinion, than an About page. He also talks about using better use of the footer and also using prominent calls to action. So I reckon this article from John really nails it. I don't really highlight too many articles on ProBlogger in this podcast, but I really do want you to go and read it. But I want to add a little bit more to it. John's spot on with his observations. But one of the things I've noticed recently as I was preparing for my talk at Social Media Marketing World in March, I was asked to talk about the future of blogging, in which I did cover some of the stuff that John talks about in this article. But in preparation for my talk, I decided I wanted to do some research on the blogs of the speakers of Social Media Marketing World. For those of you who aren't familiar with Social Media Marketing World, it's a conference attended by, 3,000 or so marketers, social media marketers in San Diego. It's run by Michael Stelzner from Social Media Examiner, and he brings on hundreds of social media marketing experts from around the globe to speak at his event. Amazing people like Justin Brown and Peg Fitzpatrick, who you would have heard in previous interviews over the last few weeks. He brings in people like Pat Flynn, Mari Smith, Michael Hyatt, who I just talked about, Chris Ducker, Amy Porterfield, some of these sort of gurus in social media marketing. And so I decided in preparation for my talk on the future of blogging to do some analysis of the blogs of the speakers of Social Media Marketing World. Firstly, I wanted to work out how many of them were actually blogging today, because there were experts there talking about all kinds of things, from Instagram to Pinterest to Facebook advertising, all that type of stuff. So I wanted to work out how many of them were actually using blogs, but also what innovative stuff were they actually doing on their blogs. And what I found was really interesting. Took me about 3 days to go through about 200 speakers, so it was a lot of time really digging into their blogs. And what I found is that almost all of them were blogging in some fashion. If you have a very broad definition of blogging, if you include video blogging and podcasting and even Instagramming, or creating regular content, as I talked about a few episodes ago, most of them are blogging on that type of scale. But only about half of them had what I would consider to be a traditional kind of blog, and mainly written content. So about half of them were doing that type of blogging. And most of those bloggers were updating their blogs at least once a week. So they were regularly blogging, and it was a fairly central part of their business. But one of the things I noticed as I was working through the speakers, and I was particularly looking for what they were doing that was innovative. What are the new sexy things that people are doing? Some of the things we've just talked about, in fact. I wanted to find some examples of that. And whilst there was a few people doing that type of thing, what I noticed is that the vast majority of bloggers who were speakers at Social Media Marketing World were not doing really anything that I would consider to be sexy. They weren't doing the new innovative stuff. Most of them had front pages on their blogs, for example, that looked like blogs from 2010 or even before. Most of them had just one call to action to subscribe on their list. Most of them weren't doing anything that I would consider particularly innovative with their design or user interface. I kind of didn't know what to do with this at first. And part of me was a bit surprised and was like, do these people know what's going on? But then I realized that maybe they were doing something right after all, because as I dug into their blogs, I realized that they were getting a lot of comments on their blogs. And as I began to look at their social media accounts, I was like, these people have a lot of people following them. They have a lot of people sharing their content on their blogs as well. And so whilst their blogs maybe looked a little dated and maybe they weren't doing the most sexy stuff, they were doing something right. Still, they had quite large and engaged audiences, and it really struck me that while some of us get really into all the latest technologies, and some of us get right into tweaking the plugins and the tools and tweaking user interface and watching whether our page views go up when we make a little change on to a button here and there, whilst we're spending a lot of time tweaking all this stuff, there's this other set of bloggers who are doing amazing things, who are focusing on other stuff, maybe the non-sexy stuff. And what I realized as I dug into these blogs is that they were doing three things brilliantly, and they were prolific at these three things. And it was a good reminder for me as I begin to think about all the innovations and all the cool stuff that you can do. Don't throw out these other three things that these amazing bloggers are doing.
You're listening to Pro Blogger.
Firstly, they're prolifically and consistently creating meaningful and useful content that answers questions and solves problems of the people who follow them. They know the needs of their audience, and they create content regularly to meet those needs. That is what they're spending most of their time doing. It is very evident as you look at these blogs that they may not look the coolest blogs, but they've got amazing content, really deep, useful, life-changing content in many ways. So spend time prolifically, consistently creating meaningful and useful content. Number two thing that they're obsessed with, and that is engaging with their audience. If you dig into their social media accounts, you see them there, present, answering questions, getting to know their audience, serving those who follow them. It was amazing to see the speakers at Social Media Marketing World this year. So many of them would sit outside their sessions after they were finished for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, answering questions, serving their audience. They realized that more important than how their blogs particularly looked and the user interface on them was the fact that their readers knew that they cared about them and that they wanted to serve them. So number two, serving their audience, engaging with their audience. And number three, they're prolifically promoting what they do. They're networking, they're guest posting, they're attending conferences, they're spending time getting to know other key influencers, and they're doing whatever they can to get themselves in front of the type of readers that they want to have read their blogs. It struck me as I was looking at these, 100 or so bloggers, that whilst a lot of the design and user interface and site optimization things that John talks about in his article are really interesting, there really are cool things to be talking about, and they can have some really positive impacts upon your blog. It's actually the relentless pursuit of creating great content, being highly engaging and promoting yourself is what really going to be the key to your success. I'm not saying that design and sexy interface are not worth doing, but don't do it at the expense of the quality of your content and the serving of your community. I'm personally investing time and money into the stuff I've already talked about in this episode. I'm spending time and money investing into design on my blogs and to user interface and to testing some of these new cool things that you can do on your site. But what I found is that every time I do a site redesign, every time I do this type of stuff, I see like 1% increases in conversions. I see very small increases in conversions. They're the cream on top. The real substance comes from what you do around your content, around the community that you build, the engagement that you build, and the promotion of your content. So yes, invest in all this new cool stuff. Really tweak and test and give them all a go, but don't do it at the expense of the other key elements of building a successful blog. Great content, engagement with your audience, and promoting what you do. I hope you find that helpful. I would love your feedback on this. Are you someone who has a tendency to spend a lot of time on the cool stuff, or do you spend more time on the content and the community and the engagement? Love to hear what you think. I actually think it's when these two sort of sides of the equation come together that the real magic happens. And I hope that somewhere in the midst of that, you feel a little bit challenged to work on the areas that perhaps you're neglecting and to find that balance. You can let us know what you think about today's episode over on the show notes at problogger.com/podcast/192 or over on the Facebook group, problogger.com/group, where I'd love to have a chat with you this week. Thanks for listening. Chat with you next week on the 193rd episode of the Pro Blogger Podcast.
You've been listening to Pro Blogger. If you'd like to comment on any of today's topics or subscribe to the series, find us at problogger.com/podcast. Tweet us at Pro Blogger. Find us at facebook.com/Pro Blogger or search Pro Blogger on iTunes.
Before I go, I want to give a big shout out and say thank you to Craig Hewitt and the team at Podcast Motor, who've been editing all of our podcasts for some time now. Podcast Motor have a great range of services for podcasters at all levels. They can help you to set up your podcast, but also offer a couple of excellent services to help you to edit your shows and get them up with great show notes. Check them out at podcastmotor.com.